Good afternoon. Welcome to Turnout Radio on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Nicole Inika Hamilton, back to open up with you about the latest on the dance scene and the heart of what moves us. Welcome, welcome, friends. Thank you for joining me this afternoon. And as we enter into this space together today, consider this: getting older. How do we embrace it and explore its many meaningful layers as we navigate our individual practices? And what does it look like to discover the changes in our bodies as the nuances of aging welcomes us in? On the topic of aging and dance, I recall listening to tap dancer, choreographer, writer, and pioneer Brenda Buffalino share with the New York Times that the body has this incredible way of healing itself, of finding itself anew. She said, "Now that I can sit and actually be still for a while, I get to experience my body in a different way. It enjoys being still now as much as it enjoys moving, maybe even more, breathing, listening, experiencing sound." Coming up on today's broadcast, we're going to be exploring those nuances and those thoughts surrounding getting older in our practices. Dancer, choreographer, teacher, and artistic director Terrell McGuire is going to be sharing thoughts about her own practice and what she is considering as she aligns her practice and her journey with global climate issues and environmental realities. Terrell is going to be with us for the next hour, so stay with us, stay tuned, stay locked in right here on CIUT 89.5 FM. We're going to take a break and be right back after this. Welcome back to Turnout Radio on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Nicole Inika Hamilton. Terrell McGuire is an award-winning dancer, choreographer, teacher, and artistic director. She has been an advocate for the integration of the arts into everyday life and mainstream society wherever she has lived. In her native California until the mid-70s, in New York City in the early 80s, and since then in her longtime home, Toronto. Among her accomplishments, Terrell founded and directed the indie festivals of New Dance and Music, a seminal series of national festivals that took place between 1985 and 1995, which were dedicated to building creative synergy and community through collaborations between artistic disciplines. She has also done extensive artists in schools residencies throughout Ontario, making annual trips to remote communities in the James Bay region of Northern Ontario since 1997. It's truly my great pleasure to welcome to the broadcast Terrell McGuire. Terrell, welcome to the show. What a pleasure it is to have you here today.
Thank you. So kind of you to say so.
Well, thank you to you for joining me. I'm looking so forward to sitting down and being in conversation with you today. But before we go any further, how is Terrell doing?
You know, I'm doing okay. I am very concerned about the wildfires, the flooding, the extreme kinds of temperatures that we're facing, and just the suffering of a lot of people in the world. At the same time, I'm grateful to be able to right now be safe and not suffering from some of the things that are going on worldwide. So that maybe that makes me, puts me in a better position to be helpful to people in my immediate orbit, at least, who I can help directly, and maybe reach out to people further away and offer some kind of assistance as well. Mm. I'm okay. How are you?
Oh, thank you for asking, Carol. I'm good considering, you know, and when I say considering, I'm so aware of the great heartbreak that has been happening in our world and our global climate, what our global climate has faced and or rather is facing. And so I'm good. It's interesting that you mention grateful. And I think about that word heavily. It's resonating with me because when I was sitting down with a spiritual advisor recently, we were talking about the state of the global climate, the heartbreak, what is happening to our environment, what is happening to human lives. And we were talking about the importance of how we care for our land and especially how we care for human life. And in the space of that caring, how is it that we are exercising gratefulness for each other and the land that we live and play upon? And so I'm really grateful, really, I'll choose that word again, that you have shared and opened up with those thoughts, because it is, of course, at the forefront of the minds of many.
Yeah, that's for sure. And it's interesting that you mentioned a spiritual advisor too, because I try and remind myself often that although we're very conscious of material, physical reality and what we may be seeing in terms of physical reality with things like wildfires and floods and famine and warfare, there's another layer of life. And that is the spiritual dimension. It's the non-physical, it's the non-material. And if we can connect with that layer of, I'm going to call it reality, it's part of my reality, then that maybe gives us a little more perspective to possibly entertain the idea that there are things that are going on that invisible level that can impact on the seemingly impossible situations that we sometimes see on the physical, material level.
Absolutely. Oh, yes, absolutely. And when I think about that, it brings me to a thought, Terrell, that, and perhaps even a conversations that I've had with other artists where many of us have sat down and spoken about the element of the spiritual and how often it is sometimes forgotten in our conversation when we're talking about the entire being. We often talk about the physical, very often talk about the physical and what the physical endures as we grow older and as we journey through life. But in those conversations, what we have discovered in those spaces of dance conversations, arts conversations, what many had discovered was that we rarely talk about the spiritual and how it is that our spiritual connects to our way of being, our ancestors, how the spirit also lives and breathes beyond the body. And so, again, this comes back to conversations that I've had with some, not all, but with some artists who've recognized that, yes, the spirit is an element of conversation that they have rarely explored during the course of their practice.
And yet, I have always seen or felt the connection between the spirit and creativity.
Yes.
Yeah. The whole creative process. But it's been tricky for me at times in the past to even bring spirituality into a conversation about art making, especially in the dance realm. It's something that isn't particularly understood or even tolerated very well. And that's even without being religion specific, because we know that there have been many unfortunate aspects of religious practice, but at the same time, some amazingly beneficial, positive, valuable aspects of spiritual practice. But I do think, I would agree with you very much that the spiritual, whether we recognize it or acknowledge it, it's there. It's just more ephemeral because it doesn't have solid mass the way physical reality does.
Yeah. But
it's certainly a component of the practice of many artists, whether it's made specific or not.
Yes, yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And Terrell, throughout your career, you have participated in a multitude of interdisciplinary works. And I'm curious, as we talk about the spirit at this stage in your work, what questions and thoughts are you most interested in as you explore your artistic practice? Is the spirit one of them, and perhaps maybe global climate?
Yeah, sure. As for a dancer, age removes certain possibilities in terms of a sense of physical virtuosity, I might call it. But it doesn't, and this is not true just in dance, I think of any art form, age does not remove a curiosity and a creative desire to continue to explore. I really can't imagine that in this lifetime, in what I have left of this lifetime, that I'll even begin to cover all the strands of interest, of curiosity, whether they're spiritual specific, I guess I would say, or just strands of creative exploration. There's always more. And therefore, I would say that an artist's creative practice is eternal, well, or at least lifelong, because the creative process gives us opportunities to pivot, using that word that's quite overused these days, but suits my purpose here, to pivot or just to open up channels that maybe we didn't have the opportunity to pursue when, as a practicing dancer, you spend a lot of time, as you would know, a lot of time just working on your instrument,
right,
on your physical body, on your technique, on your ability to use this body that we've all been given, to use that body as an instrument of expression. That takes a lot of time and a lot of energy. And for me, I have to say, it doesn't stop. I can't move the way I moved at an earlier stage. There's just not, that's not within the realm of possibility or reality. But I have to keep exploring what this body can do through various movement modalities, of which there are an infinite number, just to continue to find out what can be expressed. So one of the things, when I just sort of circle back to what you were mentioning about climate and the environment, Nicole, one of the things I've been doing is moving, dancing, I would say, with trees, amongst trees, with trees, offering workshops, as I just recently did at a festival in Muskoka. It's called the Chautauqua Festival. It's a quite new festival, but it's aligned with a much older festival, the Chautauqua Festival of Upstate New York. And in that festival, there is a nature focus. It takes place in Muskoka, which is a natural kind of rural environment. And they invited me and gave me the opportunity to create, as I've been doing actually intermittently for many, many, many years, but not as often as my stage dancing career took me.
Yes.
But, it's just really been a time to deepen the connection to trees, to water, to earth, to sky, the things that I've grown up caring about, but maybe was more diverted from with the fascinating universe of creating dance on the stage,
which has
its own multiple opportunities to create magic. But being outdoors and helping other people to viscerally and physically create that connection, feel that connection that we humans have with the nature, with the natural world, whether it's really wild nature or more manufactured nature up like in a park. I really like to think that the more I can share those experiences with people, the more people will begin to sense through their own direct experience how we are interconnected. We're interconnected with each other, even though I don't think acknowledge that nearly enough, but we're deeply interconnected and interdependent with the natural world.
Yes. Yes. And I'm curious as I'm listening to your shares through that space of curiosity, Terrell, and that space of exploration and deepening of connection. What have you discovered about growing older, about your own practice, and even about your connection to your own body?
Wow, where do I start? I'll just give an example. So some of the trees that I've come in contact with are very old trees. They're very big. They're very tall. They may not be positioned in places where their roots can go deep. I'm thinking of one place I've been recently where the tenacity and the adaptability of this particular tree, I was really observing a couple things. This tree is growing on very little soil, on rock, over rock, very little soil. So what has this big, wide trunked tree done? It has reached out with its roots horizontally along whatever earth it can find. So that's real adaptability. And it also has extremely rough bark with some kind of maybe scars and wounds that have come from whatever, humans or maybe the wind and rain. And I'm thinking, yeah, well, that's like our bodies. Our bodies carry our histories. And more I'm noticing like my skin, it's really got all kinds of bumps and little dots and little parts that are more chapped. And thinking, yeah, well, look at this tree. It's not complaining. It's not going off and getting laser derma treatments or getting Botox or getting a facelift. This tree is just, it's just being, it's being who it is and where it is and what it is. And I think, I think I'm going to take that image to heart and not fret about what was, and just continue to keep investigating what is, what the possibilities are, and bringing it back to what you mentioned, movement, to just what those movement options are and how I can share them. Because when you've spent decades and decades and decades working with your own body, you learn a lot. And I've also somehow had the opportunity, the privilege of having people reach out to me to work with them, with their bodies, whether it's in a class, large group situation, small group, or one-on-one work with people. So I've really developed, I think it was maybe a skill that I had naturally, but I've honed it. And that is to read bodies. So even without a lot of scientific background, although I do try and keep up to a certain extent with investigations in body science and body therapies.
Right.
But I really feel that by reading bodies, I can help people understand how they can better move and how they can move through life at whatever stage they are in ways that are going to be healthy and constructive.
You know, Terrell, as you were sharing, something really resonated with me so powerfully, and it was the example that you gave of the tree. And when I think about how beautiful trees are, the history that they hold, the roots that travel so deeply into the ground, the wisdom that they have, the care that they offer our earth, and so much more, I also start to think about my grandmother and how beautiful the history that lied within her when she was here and when she walked this earth with us physically. I remember looking at her hands, Terrell. I really loved looking at my grandmother's hands and looking at the beautiful wrinkles on her skin and thinking about just how much history she held within those hands, how much wisdom, how much education, how much thought, how much life she held within those hands. And so I was thinking about that as you were talking about that example with the tree, and just how much respect I think needs to be given to that tree and to human life because of the amount of wisdom that is held in both.
Yeah, it's so true, isn't it? Yeah, and I guess that idea of our bodies carrying our histories, even as they become more and more, I mean, we could even say decrepit. That was a term a friend of mine used recently, also an older dancer. But I don't think trees think of themselves as decrepit. I think their consciousness is beyond that kind of value judgment making. Mm-hmm. And they do offer us such examples of really very beneficial ways of being. And yeah, I love that you had that sense about your grandmother and what she carried, and probably she had incredible stories, she had experiences,
yes,
that were only hers, and that you were able to feel them through her ability to communicate them. And I think trees communicate with us too, but we don't know their language, but we do really need to maintain awareness that they keep us alive. Without those trees,
yes,
we really don't have a chance. They're so important. And there have been some really extraordinary books recently that have really come across into my orbit. There's a book by Suzanne Simard called Finding the Mother Tree. I don't know if you've heard of it, Nicole, but it's well worth investigating, because Suzanne Simard grew up in a logging family. Like, her family were loggers in British Columbia. And they logged more in the old ways, that is, pre-clear cut and high-tech equipment that just decimate and ravage forests. So when she began to study more about forestry, like in university, and studied more the science of trees, she began to be really disturbed at how wrong forestry practices of the current times, such as clear cutting, how wrong they are. And she worked so hard as a woman against a pretty strong logging patriarchy to try and help people understand that the way trees, the way forests were being wiped out and then replanted, that they were replanting them in all the wrong ways, because they weren't acknowledging the relationships between trees, between the earth beneath the trees, the mycelial network, and the way trees, different kinds of trees, supported each other. There's been no awareness of that in the logging industry, because it's all about profit. Right. And therein lies a whole other topic, which is, I think, the great misfortune of the way our capitalist world has created so much damage for the planet.
Yes, 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 indeed, Terrell. And, you know, I've really been enjoying our conversation today, and it is illuminating a lot of thought for me with regards to not only the global climate, but how it is that we engage with climate, with environment, with the land, with our own bodies. And it leads me to another question that I was considering before we had our time together, which is the misconceptions about growing older, what we think about as we are growing older, not only within our own creative practices, but even outside of that, the misconceptions and what we think about when we consider what it means to grow older on this land, in this world, and among one another. What are some of the misconceptions about growing older in practice come to mind for you that you would like to disrupt?
Okay, I'll take that on. There is a sometimes fairly common belief that people in whatever art discipline it is do their best work when they're younger and kind of at the height of their creative powers. But I have come across studies, and I'm sorry I can't cite them specifically. There's a lot of evidence, and there are many examples of artists who continue to do really meaningful, valuable, beautiful, relevant work their entire lives. And of course, in dance, because as I was mentioning, our physical bodies are our instruments as dancers, that does not mean that we no longer can do work that's relevant and valid. And I was having a conversation. It's a little bit of a tangent here, but I was having a conversation with a musician friend a while back, and he was saying, you got to stay relevant, got to stay relevant. Now, he's younger than I am, but he was feeling his age, let us just say, that day. This was a man probably still in his late 50s, and he was feeling that even though he'd been trained as a classical musician and also had done a lot of work in R&B, he felt that he had to somehow have a hip hop practice in order to stay relevant. And I went, yeah, if that resonates with you, if that calls to you, by all means, go there. But I think it was that pressure to be young and hip. And maybe that's not really where his true interests really existed, but he was feeling that. And I can acknowledge that. I mean, we've all on the road to getting older have felt that we had to do things to keep us from appearing old or aged out or unaware, you know, whether it means staying really on top of social media trends and using technology, the way people in younger generations have actually grown up with as part of their environment, speaking of the environment, things that kind of come naturally to them, whether it's feeling that we have to be as skilled at all the technical aspects of living, or whether it's just trying to look or act younger. I think we aren't immune to those pressures. And I remember, I had to deal with when my kids were younger and I'd be trying to figure out my phone or something. And I'd go to my daughter who, you know, when she was like a know-it-all teenager and say, can you help me with this? And she'd roll her eyes and go, oh, mom, it's so easy. So, and then you feel like you let yourself for a moment feel that feeling of being really inadequate and then go, hey, you grew up with this. It was around you all the time. It's like second nature to you. And I didn't have that advantage. So just right. Do it. Okay. And cut the judgment call here. But I think too that we've so long lived in the West, in North America, we've lived in such a youth-oriented culture that maybe that's shifting a little bit, that possibly because of just the demographics of there's a greater mass of older people now who don't want to feel like we're completely out to pasture, that we want to be able to use the perspective that we've gained over time. That's one thing you can't take away is perspective. And for some people, it's wisdom. I know some people who I find very wise. I know some younger people who I find very wise. But a lot of older people who have both wisdom and perspective, that's a pretty potent and useful combination. And as far as artists go, just passing on the kinds of histories that we have been able to accumulate and acquire is a real gift, because some of the teachers, for example, that I had when I was younger as a dancer and choreographer in training, those teachers are long gone. So the people I teach now, I'm kind of the conduit for some of that knowledge from some of those people who
That's right.
are no longer with us. So we really do have a lot to offer, and I hope people, as we age, and are able to maybe have more information about how to stay as healthy as we can, really take on that role of leadership without feeling in any way diminished, by not being techno wizards, the techno wizards that we'd like to be, but actually so much of that stuff just bores me, I'm sorry to say, that I'm very happy to just hand it over to one of my younger students or my now older kids and just say, show me how to do this, please, or do this for me. And I'll take care of other areas that you don't really have the information or the knowledge to be able to take on.
Right, right. And what I'm so mindful of is you were speaking of those teachers before you and you being a conduit, is that those who are learning from you now really are afforded a wonderful opportunity to learn from not only your practice and your interpretation of what you learned from those teachers before you, but they're also benefiting from the wisdom of those that came before you and the wisdom of those that came before your teachers as well. And so there's a great amount of history, wisdom, knowledge, exploration that is passed, ideas of exploration that are passed on, which I think is such an important part as I'm listening to you share, Terrell, about the disruption of those misconceptions about aging, that there is an absolute beauty in the aging that we get to acquire because we get to learn from those who came before. And we also have this wonderful opportunity to learn about ourselves in that journey of getting older and becoming seasoned in our practice and in life.
Yes. And another important thing to mention about that, that carrying on things we've learned from those before us, is in my case, I'm very, very aware of the things that needed to change. Because yes, you know that a lot of the dance training that I experienced, certainly not all of it, but a lot of it, was very dogmatic. It was very patriarchal. It was very dictatorial. And sometimes it was misguided and it could be cruel. And some of it was abusive. And we have to recognize that. Let's carry forward the things that are of value. Let's keep them. And let's get rid of the other stuff, because a lot of dancers, and you probably know some, their careers were ruined by working with choreographers who insisted on having them dance and learn in ways that were unsafe for them, whether emotionally or physically or spiritually. So I feel that there's been the opportunity for me to take those parts of my training that I felt were really negative and come and bring to the teaching and the choreographing that I do with other dancers, to bring respect for everyone, no matter what their level of experience, even if they have very little and I have a great deal, everybody has something to offer. And I think that it's been a great opportunity for me in teaching and being an older teacher to make sure in my teaching and wherever I can speak out about others' teaching, to just get rid of those practices that are less than beneficial, get rid of that kind of really dogmatic, I'm the choreographer and therefore I'm holier than everybody else and I know everything and don't question. I like people to be able to question and to be able to bring their own creative contributions into a studio where work is being done, right, with a studio or an outdoor environment. But I really value that opportunity to have been able to, at least in one small way, evolve the practice of teaching and of bringing more constructive practices into dance training.
Yes, yeah, beautifully shared, Terrell. There is an element of understanding that what we're bringing forward, we have this additional opportunity and responsibility mm-hmm. as well to consider what needs to be shifted, what needs to be pushed forward, what needs to be abolished, mm-hmm. And how it is that we create spaces where we can move forward, live, breathe, grow, create in a manner that does speak to our truth, speak to our lived experiences, and also speak to our history. And so I really love what you've just shared there when we think about how it is that we are bringing information forward, because I think about the amount of responsibility that is involved when bringing that information forward to future generations.
I think that's very important, because teachers and choreographers have a lot of power, and there is like that power differential. And I think we really, really, really need to be so aware of that. It is absolutely essential. And hopefully being older and being aware of the kinds of training and the kind of things that happened in the studio as dancers working with choreographers, that we remember those things that, just like, you know, people say about their parents, oh, I never want to be like my mother. I don't want to be like that. And then you end up behaving like your own mother with your kids. We don't want to go into the studio and repeat some of the bad, what I call bad or negative practices for teaching or interacting with dancers. That's just so absolutely important, is to have that awareness, not to just kind of unconsciously even repeat behaviors that are not in any way beneficial to anybody.
Right. Right. Wow. Well, Terrell, as you're sharing, I'm considering so much about teaching practices as well, which makes me consider that we need to have a part two of this conversation in future, because there's so much to discover as well about specific to our teaching practices and our approach to our teaching practices. So you have my wheels turning in so many different ways this afternoon. But before we do close today, I'm curious, as you move forward, as you journey forward into this beautiful career, continue into this beautiful career and practice that you have, what's next for Terrell? What is on your mind and on your heart in terms of what's critical for you to be considering now? I rounded back to the beginning of our interview as you were sharing about so many of the things on your mind. And as you move forward now, what's next for Terrell?
I don't always know. I'm not very good at things like five-year plans and methodically kind of just taking each step a step at a time. But I always have a million ideas, like way too many, as I think I alluded to before, way too many ideas and desires for creative projects that I'll ever fit into this the rest of my lifetime. But one thing that I have begun is working with several colleagues. My friend and colleague, Julia Applin, who's another tree dance aficionado, John Zosky, who's a composer, David Langer, who is a former dancer and a videographer. And the four of us have an ad hoc collective. We call ourselves the Grove Collective. And we first worked together. We've all worked together in various combinations over the years, but the four of us together received a National Arts Center, a commission called Canada performs. They were live stream videos that they gave out of a number of generous, not generous financially, they weren't a lot of money, but they gave a lot of them for the pandemic. It was a pandemic project. And we found a ravine in the Toronto area, and we kind of made friends with that ravine, and we created a 40-minute dance piece.
Dance music piece,
and it was filmed, and it was part of this. It was live streamed through this program from the NAC. Now, what we've done is, because it was live stream, and we were working outdoors, it's not broadcast quality. It was because at the time it was broadcast through, I think it was YouTube, so it was okay then, but it has eroded. However, I have a clip that gives an idea of what it is. And we have since continued to work together periodically. That was 2020. We are going to, we've started communicating and actually connecting with an area outside of Toronto. It's in the Algonquin Highlands, the Halliburton area, which is the most economically depressed area in Ontario, apparently, so we're told. We're going to work with the community and with their wooded areas there, and we've already started this exploration, to involve the community, to create and perform ourselves, but work in an interactive way with members of the community, and hopefully offer a number of different kinds of workshops as well. We've already been in one of the wooded areas working ourselves, doing creative exploration. And we convened a meeting with people from the community to talk about what we might do together to support that community with our work together.
Wonderful. Oh, wonderful. Well, Terrell, and we want to make sure that our audience has an opportunity to learn more, not only about this stream that you've just shared, the film, and also about your practice. And so, folks, we invite you after this broadcast, please visit turnoutradio.com. And there is where you'll be able to find Terrell's bio, as well as information on how to connect with Terrell. Terrell, you are joy, let me tell you. It has been such a great pleasure to sit down and listen to your shares today. Thank you so much for exploring thought with me today on Turnout Radio.
Thank you, Nicole. It's been my pleasure.
Welcome back to Turnout Radio on CIUT 89.5 FM. Well, that's it for today's broadcast. I want to take this time to thank Terrell McGuire for joining me on the show. What a pleasure it was to dialogue with Terrell today. And listen, if you missed her shares, we've got you covered. The full interview will soon be streaming on turnoutradio.com, CIUT.FM, and also on some of your favorite podcast platforms. While on our website at turnoutradio.com, be sure to visit the archives of many of our past interviews to have an opportunity to learn more about stories like today's that live both on and beyond the stage. And connect with us. We'd love to hear from you. Email us at turnoutradio@ciut.fm. Have a wonderful afternoon, folks. Until next time. Join us again next week right here on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Nicole Inica Hamilton. I hope your week finds you turning out to dance. Thank you.
Thank you.